Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Triangulation, episode 80, recorded November 28th, 2012. Pierre-Olivier Latour and Everpix. Triangulation is brought to you by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it right from your desk. For our special offer, visit Stamps.com, click on the microphone, and enter Triangulation. And by Pond5, the world's stock media marketplace. If you're a media maker looking for video, photos, illustrations, music, sound effects, After Effects templates, or 3D models, check out Pond5. And don't forget to download 50 free stock media files at pond5.com/triangulation. It's time for Triangulation. I love this show. I've missed it so much. A chance for me to get together with some of the smartest, most interesting people in the business and pick their brains for an hour. And yes, you too, because that's the triangulation part. It's me, it's our guest, and it's also you in the chat room. Your questions, your thoughts, and your comments, and we'll incorporate them in as the show goes. Before I do that, though, I want to thank everybody who filled in for me on Triangulation. It was Tom Merritt, right? Sarah Lane, right? Who else? And Ayaz Akhtar. So that's great. Thank you guys for doing the heavy lifting while I was gone. But I'm back, baby, and I've got a great guest. His name is Pierre-Olivier Latour. He is, as you might guess from his name, from France. He was trained in Switzerland, in Lausanne. But you may know him better by the products he has created. He did a program. It was called Well, first of all, welcome.
Thank
Pierre.
You.
I'm going to call you Pierre.
Yes, that's perfectly
fewer syllables.
Fine. Thank
you. It's good to have you. Thanks for joining us, Triangulation. Pixel Shock.
Shocks. Yes.
Shox.
Yes.
Now, people say, oh, I don't know Pixel Shocks, but you may know Quartz Composer. Mm-hmm. Apple bought Pixel Shock.
Yes, that's correct.
And Quartz Composer, if you have Xcode, is so cool. It lets you tie these nodes one to the other and use all the Apple Core imaging stuff to pass stuff through. It's amazing. So that was your first product?
That was not my first product in absolute, but that was the first one that ended up having such a reach.
You did Comic Flow.
That's
awesome.
Side project from today.
Oh,
you
awesome
like that?
Project.
Okay. Yeah.
Fantastic. So you're a programmer by training. Is that your interest?
My education training is actually in robotics.
Robotics?
Yes. But I have always done software engineering, programming on the side since a very long time, and building commercial applications or sharewares or technologies like at Apple.
Right.
And now this photo startup.
And then another product that a lot of people will be aware of is Cool Iris, which is very cool. That was the gallery app that... and actually, I think that Google licensed it for Android's gallery.
So that was done... I worked at Cool Iris for a couple of years.
Yeah.
From Japan, actually. It was a great experience.
You were in Japan then?
I was in Japan from 2009, 2011.
Interesting.
Yes.
Wow.
Had great opportunity to work with very talented Tokyo designers who brought really a fresh eye on
it's
how you can do...
Amazing.
Yes.
I love Cool Iris. And it's an app for the iPad and iPhone.
So the one you described, the gallery app for Android, that was actually something done before I joined Cool Iris. What I specifically worked on at Cool Iris was the Discover application, which was the Wikipedia reader.
Oh, love that.
And
I love that. You did that?
Yeah.
And is that still available?
I don't know. I mean, I left Cool Iris...
it was in beta for a while, but remember, it took all the information from Wikipedia and made it beautiful. I think it even read it to you, did it not?
It wasn't reading it to you, but it was a very interesting project because at the time we were trying to figure out, Cool Iris being a very visual company,
right.
You know, the iPad had just been released,
right.
Such a great format, finally a tablet that has a chance at succeeding with the mass market.
Right.
And what can you build that's original on it? And I like challenges in general. So one challenge is how do you display text in an interesting way on a tablet?
Right.
And what's a great source of text? Well, Wikipedia is one, right?
Yeah.
But it's an encyclopedia, so it's a little bit boring too.
Right.
So
yeah, the text floated in and moved around.
We had
I wish I had a copy of it here.
Well,
somewhere.
I was looking for it this morning on the App Store. I couldn't find it,
I think
maybe it's
not
temporarily
there anymore.
Pulled.
Yeah.
But so the idea was I came up with one night was, let's try to present the content of Wikipedia like a magazine, mm-hmm. so that the idea is every day you launch the app and you get a fresh new cover. Mm. And there's a great source for a cover, which is the article of the day on Wikipedia, right. which is always right. high quality, and you got right. the photo of the day.
Right.
So you had the back page of the magazine and the front page, which was the article of the day. The back page was the photo of the day, right? Yeah. Full size, beautiful. Right. And then we were looking for a number of categories on Wikipedia to build a fake, you know, like you have on magazine covers, different sections and things like that. And that was an interesting project because it was right at the beginning of the wave of let's do everything like magazine style on iPad.
Right.
Flipboard, was released, I think, a couple of weeks before. It was very interesting timing, or 3 weeks before. And that was really at the beginning of all this new direction.
You've also done game programming.
Yes, that was actually my first company. That was a game company for Mac. I was working on while I was studying for my engineering degree in Switzerland. And so it was a group of about 10 people, half Swiss, half French people, working remotely, now and then getting together for like a month or something. And we built a video game for Mac that was released, I think, in the year 2000. That was a great experience, obviously.
What was that?
It was called Water Race. It was a racing game uh-huh. of boats. And we had some very beautiful graphics. We had awesome music to go with it. People loved the music. And we got pretty good reviews. It was mostly known in Europe. In the US, it was just sold directly online. But in Europe, it was sold physically in stores and so on. It was a great experience, you know, first startup, right? And being able to work with many people in a distributed way, being able to work with distributors, which was a great experience as well. Like I learned, for example, that even if you do your best possible work for building a product and you really polish everything and you work hard, then you have the distribution step. And in that case, we had some serious problem with a very large distributor in Europe. And, you know, by the time the copies hit the shelves, the promotion was already out in the newspapers and things like that, so bad timing and then payment problems, and that really discouraged a number of people on the team. So we folded the company. We folded it in 2002, I think.
This is why developers embrace the App Store from Apple, even though you give up some stuff and you have to get approved.
Mm-hmm.
At least you don't have to worry about shelves and boxes.
It does help a lot.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it does level the competitive field quite a bit.
Everybody's an equal. Mm-hmm. Somebody like Rovio can come along, do Angry Birds and take over the world.
Absolutely.
And whoever heard of Rovio?
No,
do you do robotics at all anymore?
Not really. Not really.
Do you miss it?
I really like robotics.
Yeah.
Indeed. It's a fascinating field.
Were you doing
it
for industrial applications? Or?
So what I learned at school, really, because I didn't apply it in the industry afterwards, was indeed in the medical field and in the manufacturing field.
Interesting. But it's interesting because there's no user interface for robotics is not important. And everything you do now, it's mm-hmm. about user interface. It's about beautiful design.
Yes. Consumer software, yes.
Consumer software.
I think Apple changed really the game here.
Right.
Because 10 years ago, people using Mac products essentially, were not really paying attention or putting any value on the design and elegance of products.
Right.
And I would say there are a few companies from my perspective, like Nintendo with the Wii, and Apple, of course, with all its series of hits, which really started making people aware that great design, great user interface really brings some value, concrete value, because you spend less time tinkering with the product, you enjoy it more.
Right.
And yes, it's worth paying a little more to have that.
Right.
So, and I think the way it actually became possible is because of the iPhone. Because on the desktop computer, if you wish, in the desktop computer world, people were really stuck with the type of interface we had for a very long time, and it's very hard to move the incumbent. iPhone, the competition was so bad at the time, you could almost start from start,
clean
right?
start, yeah.
And then you expose all the casual users to something that really works great from the start.
No
so you
windows,
raise the bar.
No menus,
yeah.
Full screen, touch, and so everything is new.
It's fast.
All fresh.
It works fast. It works great.
It's
and then
always
you raise
connected.
The bar. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's very important.
Yeah.
So for people like for example the startup we have now, made of people who really care about the quality of the product and so on. What's comforting is that we hope to find enough users who see value in that now.
Right.
And it might have been a lot harder 10 years ago, for instance.
Right.
So you've worked for big companies, but you decided, this isn't the first company you started.
That is, in effect, the second.
Second, because you started the gaming company as a student. What made you want to start your own company?
I would say the willingness to really be in control of your destiny and what you do with your ideas. Yeah. I think it's
same
very important.
For me. Yeah. Control.
Yes.
You want to, and you don't want somebody else to decide what's good and what's bad. You get to do it.
Well, you always have people above you, right? Whether it's your investors or
somebody told me that. I said, I don't want to work for the man. You know the phrase, the man?
Yeah, yeah.
And somebody said, I think it was Patrick Norton, there's always a man. You're never the man. Yeah. There's always somebody. So you have investors now. You were angel
yes.
funding?
We're a pre-series A, so we have seed funding, and we did convertible note before that and so on.
So the man's not yet too demanding. We're talking to Pierre-Olivier Latour. His friends call him Paul, P-O-L.
Yes.
I'm going to call him Pierre, and we're going to talk about Everpix, which is your startup. And the idea behind it. The first thing I thought is he's going straight after Flickr, but I guess I was wrong.
Well,
so it's something a little different. We're going to talk about it in just a second. But first, let me remind everybody about this time of year. What do you remember last December? Going to the post office? Ah, bad news. Go to this now. You don't have to anymore. Stamps.com. Stamps.com is for the postal pro. So if you're an amateur, you're just mailing some Christmas, don't worry about it. But if mailing is part of your job, if you do fulfillment, if you're an Amazon seller, an eBay seller, a PayPal seller, Etsy, and you got to do fulfillment, you got to be a postal pro. And the postal pros know, going to the post office, that's for the amateurs. The pros use stamps.com. It lets you buy and print official U.S. postage right from your computer and your printer. You don't need a postage meter. You don't need a special inks. But more importantly, it kind of does all the labor of fulfillment for you. So if you're an eBay, Amazon, PayPal seller, Etsy seller, it takes the data. So you've sold something. Takes the data from the buyer, automatically puts it in the mailing label. You've got the scale, the USB scale. You plop the package on there. It prints out the mailing label, the exact right printed postage, puts your marketing message on that, your logo if you want, fills out forms if it's international, does all of that. And it even gives you discounts the post office won't give you. Up to 21% on express mail, 15% on priority mail. It sends an email automatically out to the recipient on those two and says, hey, expect your package. It's going to be delivered on this day. I mean, this is for the postal pro. It's stamps.com. If you do a lot of mailing, it is well worth it. Now, if you go to stamps.com, you're going to see that there is a no-risk trial offer. That is not our offer. Please click the radio microphone. Heard about us on a radio or podcast? Click here. And then enter in the offer code Triangulation, name of the show, Triangulation. And press go. Ah, now you know you're in the right spot because you see some old guy smiling at you saying, hey, here's a $110 bonus offer, $55 in postage coupons, a free digital scale, a $5. That's the USB scale I was talking about. You just pay postage and handling for that. It's worth about, I think it's $5 on the postage and handling. 4-week trial, and now you got stamps.com. And I'm telling you, you will say thank you. You won't have to go to the post office this month or any month ever again. The mail carrier comes, picks it up. Everything looks super pro. It even prints right on the envelope if you want. Stamps.com. Remember, go to the page, click the microphone, and use the offer code Triangulation for our no-risk trial offer. Stamps.com. We're talking to Paul, Pierre-Olivier Latour, about his new startup. So I'm excited because everything you've done, Comic Flow, so cool. Cool Iris, just amazing. Discover, amazing. One of my favorite parts of Xcode is the Quartz editor. It's just drag and drop, and you draw the lines between. I mean, it's so amazing. Quartz Composer is amazing. So I'm very intrigued by what you're going to do here with Everpix.
Okay.
Now, you've been in a one-year closed beta, right?
Pretty much, yes.
Yeah. So it is now, for the first time, public.
Yes.
So people can sign up. Now, somebody in the chat room just said, because you said off when we were just beginning, oh, don't do that yet. We're going to launch it Thursday.
I was referring specifically to email syncing.
So people shouldn't hold off now.
Absolutely not. There's no reason.
Go to Everpix. You'll enter your email address right there. And I got an email instantly, and I was able to sign up. But I thought, looking at this, it says, snap all the photos you want, spend more time enjoying them, discover what you have, share what you love, I kind of read the last part more than it. I thought it's like, oh, it's Flickr. Mm-hmm. But it's not.
No, we're not trying to replace Flickr. Our goal is not to build a community of photographer. We think there are already great solutions for that or great startup building it. What we're really trying to solve is reconnecting people, average users, not pro photographers or semi-pros, average people, reconnect them to their increasingly large photo collections.
Well, and that's what's happened with digital photography. It's overwhelming. Yeah, you could take a lot of pictures. They're free. But what's not free is your time going through them when you get back. I just got back from a trip. I have literally 700 photos. Typically, I'll have thousands. Mm-hmm. And I never go through them because it's like, oh, I don't even want to look at them. So what do you do to make that easier?
So it's a few steps. It's a very interesting problem because we have to deal with such a large amount of photos. From what we see, the average user, you know, will have almost 10,000 photos in our system by the end of the year. And that's a massive amount of photo to deal with, to be able to engage with, to revisit, and to be able to share if you want to do so. So one of the first things we realized we're tackling this problem is that, of course, you need to have all the photos in one place because it simplifies things. But that's really...
That means not just the photos on your hard drive.
That's correct,
but on
yes.
Twitter, Instagram, Facebook,
yes.
And Flickr, you support all of those.
Yes, so that's a prerequisite, though.
Right.
That doesn't really solve anything because you're
Picasso
taking the mess
Web
that's...
Also.
Yep. Yes, you're taking the mess that's in multiple places
right.
And consolidating...
It's a big pile.
Into a, yeah, it's a single mess instead of multiple.
One mess.
Right. That doesn't really
Thanks.
Solve anything. And then on the other interesting thing is a ton of people are working on the other end of the equation, which is how do you share?
Right.
How do
Instagram is actually perfect. Facebook is perfect for sharing.
Right.
Everything I need. So you were smart not to say... We're going to be a better Flickr because, frankly, there already is a better Flickr.
Yes,
it's Instagram. It's Facebook.
And it works fine.
And it works fine.
So, however, there's this elephant in the room which nobody is really addressing, which is when you have a collection, when an average user has a collection of 10,000, 20,000 photos, how do you get them to engage again, to enjoy these photos? And this is not just a problem of putting it in one place. Then you have to be able to make sense of the collection. You've got to be able to understand the photos, to extract what matters, and then show it to the user, simplify it so that they can share it very easily with their friends. So it's a very visual thing. I think it's easier if I show in practice
okay.
how things work.
So you have it. So right now, it's a Mac, it's a website.
Correct.
That does all that, right?
So we have a website.
That's fully functional.
Yes,
that's,
absolutely.
Okay.
We have a website. We have iPhone app, iPad app.
Okay.
We have
a Mac uploader.
A Mac uploader. We have a Windows uploader coming out.
Coming, okay.
And
are you looking at Windows RT or Android for the portable stuff at some point?
We started on Android. It will take some time. Like I was saying earlier, when you want to solve a big problem like that, there are really a number of steps you need to go through. Like, I'll give you a very concrete example. You need to have all your photos with you, right? That's also one of the prerequisites. Why
right.
would you always look for photos? Did I put it on Flickr? Did I put it on Facebook?
Right.
If I just want to show you my latest trip.
Right.
So they need to be on your phone or your iPad. But
okay,
then the problem
portable
is...
portable device, yeah.
The problem is these are still pretty limited devices in terms of power.
Right.
And how do you make an application that's able to scroll through very, very fast 10,000, 20,000 photos? So in itself, today, it's still very hard to do. And there are
right.
very few apps, if any outside
right.
Apple, which are able to do this.
Right.
So that is just to say there are really lots of problems, technical problems, just to be able to simplify everything.
Well, there's the front end, but there's also the back end, because mm-hmm. you're doing some taxonomy, right?
That's massive, yes, absolutely.
So this is a big problem you tackled. Which part did you tackle first? Or you have to do it all at once?
Well... then it's easy to do everything half, right?
Right.
And then not get a great product.
Right.
So we really built in layer, started with let's move the photos in the cloud the most efficient way. Because this problem of moving stuff into the cloud, you could say, has pretty much been solved.
There's PhotoStream or iCloud from Apple.
Yes.
Android has this as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then for generic files, you have Dropbox and other solutions.
Yeah.
Works very well.
Yeah.
But then what's interesting with photos is they're not your random digital files. You cannot manipulate photos the way you manipulate text documents.
Right.
So, and they're also very big. They're getting bigger and bigger. If you buy a camera today on Amazon, it's going to be very hard to get anything with less than 10 megapixel
right.
sensor.
That's 10 megabytes an image.
Probably
it's
5,
JPEG,
6.
It's
yeah,
small,
5,
but,
6. Like
yeah.
the latest one I bought, if I shoot in RAW, it's 26 megabyte per file. And it's not even
in RAW.
A big DSLR one. It's just a compact one. So that's becoming insane. Now, imagine you are not in a Silicon Valley bubble, but you are in a regular area, let's say in the United States, you're not going to have a massively fast internet connection. Your provider might nowadays even put a cap on how much you can upload. So even if you say...
So well, I'm going to give up. You can't do what you just said you wanted to do.
Well, so what we figured out
I got 11,000 pictures. Actually, I have many, many more. But let's say I have 11,000.
So what we
how
realized...
How can you do that?
Well, we realized we have to optimize the photos. There's no
oh,
choice.
So you're squeezing them.
Well, we preserve full resolution, of course.
Okay.
We preserve absolutely all the metadata that is in the photo from the color profile, the EXIF, the XMP, the everything.
Okay.
And we take the raw image data in the JPEG, and we optimize it in a way that if you look at 100%, the average user will not see the difference.
So you're using a compression algorithm, but not JPEG.
No, we're using a different one.
Is it proprietary?
More modern. It's not completely proprietary. We spend a lot of time optimizing.
What's it called?
Well, it doesn't have a name. It's just
it's yours. You're the only people who are doing it.
Well, we're only the people using it this way.
Oh, this is interesting.
So,
and how much smaller are these images?
So on average, it's like 5x for us. And this is
5x below the JPEG?
Yeah. And it works very, very well. And we spend a lot of time optimizing that. You average out, like today, we have, of course, the average user in our system brings in more than 10,000 photos. And the average photo size after optimizations, you know, is less than 600 kilobytes.
Okay.
And that is spread out, of course, over old photos, which right. typically were 2 megabytes, 3 megabytes,
right.
and more recent ones, which are larger. But the point is, on average, you are moving content 5 times faster. And for the not people who are super technical necessarily, who want to shoot in RAW and this,
right.
but for regular people, the advantages are so big.
Yeah.
That it's totally worth it. Because now you come back from your trip and you have your regular kind of slow connection and you need to bring 700 photos into the cloud, we're going to be moving that 5 times faster. That's
wow.
been verified in practice.
Wow.
So that's why people can move in 10,000 plus photos into our system.
I'm doing it right now. So I signed up. You said don't do the Gmail yet because you're going to have OAuth
yes,
set up by
exactly.
Thursday. So that's fine. I left that up. But I'm on Everpix site, and I have quite a few images. So it's still importing, I guess.
Yes. So
okay.
It depends. Of course, we have a system that needs to scale, you know,
it's
depending on how many
few.
People. Yeah.
And
yeah.
we just probably sent a few more people
yeah. so
there.
Depending
Sorry.
On the days, you know, we can get millions of photos coming in. It's,
right.
It happens. It's fine.
And so you're recompressing. Do you store the original on your side or no?
No. We take a copy of the photo, full resolution, all metadata, and then we do a lot of great stuff with it. Like for
And you throw out the original.
We don't delete anything, never. We don't delete it from your computer.
No, I'm going to have it.
Yes, of course.
But this version that you store is the smaller
well,
version.
Well, we transmit, it's full size, but we transmit
right.
this optimized
well, let's
version.
See.
Yes.
I think maybe the seeing is believing on this. So this is the...
Absolutely.
And this is available now, the iPad app. It's free.
Absolutely, yeah.
But, and I think this is good to point out right up front, and actually I think it's a good thing, this is not a free service.
No, we want to build a sustainable company.
Exactly.
So,
because there's a lot of storage and bandwidth, even with this compression, that you're going to be...
Yes, there is that. And then, you know, if something is free, it will always come at a cost because
right.
your photos are not going to be full size or the reliability
or
is not going to be as good.
You're giving up privacy.
Yes.
Let me ask you before we go
Absolutely.
Any further.
Yeah.
What's the privacy on
so
this?
That's a very important question. Because we have the entire life of people in photos, we have to be extremely careful with that. So
right.
every user's account is completely siloed. Everything is completely private. There is nothing that's automatically shared or anything like that. And this is something we will not and cannot afford to change going forward.
Right. So you're saying in your privacy policy, we're not going to share this information with anybody. Nobody else can see it.
Your photos are yours. Absolutely.
This is your stuff.
We don't take any right on your photos. Absolutely.
Right.
No, we can't
But
do
you
that.
Are looking at metadata in the photos, GPS,
yes.
EXIF, stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, plus all the science we have. That's another very, very big important component.
But you're promising that this stuff is going to stay with you. We're not looking at it because you're paying us. Now, it's free for 30 days. And then
Correct.
How much is it?
So we have a monthly plan, which is $5 a month. And we have a yearly plan, which is only $40 a year.
Okay, so
that's
comparable
it.
To Flickr, and maybe it's less than something like SmugMug, which is something
yeah.
I use.
We do more. Unlimited photos, too, because since we have...
And you don't have a limit.
No. Well, we design our system from scratch to be forward-looking.
Right.
We design everything to be able to handle 20,000-plus photo collection per people.
Wow.
So that means, as part of that, is you don't want to go to your users and say... Well, here's a bunch of plans. Figure out the one that works for you, and who knows what happens if you go above it. So it's really, you know, to go back to this idea, it's really about optimizing all the pieces to have a great product. So,
and the end game is that I can now have, I've done this on my desktop.
Yes.
Or wherever those are stored. But now I have an app on my iPhone and my iPad.
Correct.
That I can say, oh, come here, it's Thanksgiving or it's Christmas. Let me show you my pictures of my trip. All right, so this is the app.
Let's look at how things work exactly. So once everything is in our system, you have, of course, you can look at it on the web. You can look at it on your iPad and your iPhone. So, for instance, this is our iPad app here. And you can see, I mean, obviously we want it to be very beautiful and touchable and so on. What we have is these applications that are able to handle very large collections. My personal collection is like 16,000 photos, for instance, and it works as fast as this one, which is only a couple thousand photos. That's for demo purposes. And, of course, you have what you would expect, the ability to navigate in groups of photos and so on.
You could. I would have said this is impossible except for Cool Iris, Comic Flow, Quartz Composer. You really have the heritage to be able to do something.
Yes, and
like
we
this.
Yeah, and
so you can zoom on any picture to the full size.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So
those look good, actually.
Yeah, we're all about quality. I mean, you know, we're three co-founders to build this company. Kevin Kenison, who's my co-founder for all the science, also comes from Apple, is very big on image processing, and therefore we spend a lot of time making sure we preserve the quality, we preserve the metadata properly. We're all about quality for this. And the other co-founder, Wayne, who takes care of all the design, obviously is also very big about making a beautiful product and preserving the quality of photos. So if you have a MacBook Pro Retina, for instance,
which
our entire website is Retina, including your photos.
Oh, that's nice.
You know, how many photo websites do that today?
That's really nice.
So, and it's the same on your iPad. We're all Retina all over the place.
Right.
iPhone, iPad, all of that.
So, go ahead.
I was just going to show you, like, you know, number of products, of course, you can see your photos in your iPad, and that's not so much a big deal. But what's very interesting is what we do with your photos. So, first of all, we need to make it easy for people to move into our system. Because even if we think that going forward, people will stop managing their photos by hand because it just doesn't make any sense anymore, you still did that in the past. So we don't want to trash that. If you have iPhoto, Aperture, Lightroom,
I put a lot of work into it. Yeah.
Yes. So we want to preserve that.
Okay.
So that's what this view here, the source view, is for instance.
Okay.
It mirrors exactly your iPhoto, Lightroom, Aperture, library in our cloud.
Okay.
You know, even Apple or Adobe don't do that today.
Right.
You go into Aperture, you modify some groups, some albums, and so on. It's mirrored in our system, right?
Okay.
So here you can see.
Oh, that's interesting. Do I run something on my PC all the time to have that? Okay.
In the background, and it syncs continuously. So here we can see this little icon indicates this is an album coming from iPhoto, for instance.
Oh, interesting.
This is just an album made of photos coming from a folder.
And are
on
these
disk.
Ordered chronologically?
Yes, by default, yes.
By default.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I can go, you know, browse by years. Oops. I can go browse by year and look at all the photos, 2011, everything I have in there, okay? So that makes it very easy for people to buy in into our system.
Yeah.
They can find their marks.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, we also do an interesting presentation, which is just what we call by moments, where we automatically organize by time your photos. And
so presumably everything I took on one day is that one moment or?
It's everything you took within a certain time, time gap, time period, right? And
iPhoto kind of does that. They
absolutely.
Call it events.
Yes, yes. We're not pretending we're inventing anything new here, but it's always practical as a view.
Right.
Now, so far, what you've seen, you know, is already practical, but it doesn't represent our real vision. Our real vision is this. It is this thing here, which is called the highlight view, because that's where we start solving the real problem, which is once you have all your 20,000 photos in one place, how do we make sense of it?
Right.
So let me backtrack a little bit here. And I can show you, for instance, so iPhoto on this iPad. So here we have a trip from Wayne, my co-founder, who went to North Korea and took, obviously, a lot of photos to memorize that and, you know, military parades and so on. And what's interesting here is that this is made by Apple for their flagship product, the iPad,
right?
iOS platform,
and they charge you $4.99 for it, yep.
And this is more of the same. This is the same stuff we've been having for 10 years.
It's not really very good, is it? Now that you compare it, yeah.
It's well done, but it doesn't really solve anything. Yeah, so you want to show the photos from your trip. You have all this redundancy there of the parade photos, and then let me show you this one and then that one, and then you skip fast and you show a different one.
Right.
This is what I've been doing lately,
yeah.
So now let's look at what this looks like in our system. So in highlights, what we do is we take all the photos of a given year, and we're able, of course, to deduplicate everything. So if you have the same photo,
there's no dupes.
We never have dupes.
Because I'm uploading it from Instagram and Picasa.
Yes,
and,
so we there would everything, be dupes. Independently of compression artifacts from the JPEG, independently of size.
By the way, what formats can I upload?
Only JPEG.
Only JPEG right now. Okay.
We're very, very focused. Our goal is really to build a product that works for the average user.
That's why what you say, it's not for pros or the prosumer, because you're not doing RAWs. We're just doing JPEG.
We're doing JPEG, which should cover more than 95% of every photo ever
I've
taken.
I've lately started shooting RAW plus JPEG because iPhoto, same thing. You have to give it a JPEG. So
you can use RAW with our system. That's fine. I shoot in RAW, for instance.
Yeah.
And what matters when you do RAW, what's interesting, it's actually the development of the photo.
Right.
It's not the RAW in itself.
No. You have to go into Aperture or Lightroom and work with it.
It's your own work.
So then I'm going to output
a JPEG. And then we synchronize that.
That's going to synchronize.
Automatically. So in Aperture, all the developed version of my RAWs are synchronized in EverPix.
You don't look at the RAWs. You just look at the developed ones.
We don't need that. Really.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So anyway.
That actually is great because there's a lot of junk and I don't want all of that. I just want the stuff that I said, oh yeah, that's good enough to work on.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so we take all this and then we deduplicate. We understand something that's very interesting and very important these days is people take more and more photos of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You take 10 shots of the same scene.
Yep.
Just in case you don't want to miss the perfect one.
Right.
So not only are photo collections getting bigger, but they're becoming more and more redundant.
Redundant, yeah.
If you want to clean up this mess, you've got to be able to recognize this redundancy.
You're going to pick the best one.
Exactly. So,
well, you don't do that, do you?
We do that. That's the whole point of the highlight view.
How would you even know what the best one was?
So what we do here is, first of all, you've got to be able to understand these are photos that are similar.
Yes.
Right?
There's 20 photos of a tank.
If you go just back 1 second
you can
to
see.
This example
you can see, exactly.
here, you see the redundancy. And it's tricky to detect. It's not; these are not duplicate photos because the composition changed.
They're only similar.
The tank
similar.
Is moving, right?
Yeah.
And it's not just a matter of looking at a timestamp of the photo because there are many cases it's not going to work. You need to literally look at the photo and understand what is the subject of the photo, what are the features, what it is about, you know? So we do all this, and we're able, because of that, to understand this series of photos is really of the same subject, independently of the variance in composition and so on, and lighting and this and that.
Okay.
We're able to understand, we go even further than that.
Yeah.
My co-founder, Kevin, who does all the science, I built a completely unique system that allows us to literally understand what the photos are about. So a photo like this, for example, we understand it's a photo of a vehicle on a street.
Right.
A photo of people in nature, we can know that.
You
know,
so you're going beyond face recognition to object recognition.
We're not doing face recognition. We're actually doing a generalized understanding of photos. We call that semantic tagging, semantic analysis. And it's really what it is. And we keep improving the system. And today we're able to already say, that's a close-up of a photo of food. That's a photo of a group of people. That looks like a wide shot of, a beach, for example.
Right.
This type of things. And we keep improving that system. And that is fed into the highlight view. So with all this knowledge of all the metadata we have, all the semantic analysis we do, all the deduplication, all the understanding of series of shots that are the same thing, we're able to take these thousands of photos and extract what matters. So here, the same North Korea trip, it's actually something you can navigate
you
like this.
You don't have 80 pictures of a tank.
You don't.
You have one or two.
All the photos that
How
kind of matter.
How do you pick which one to show?
So here, that's kind of the last step. Once we figure out, okay, that's a lot of redundancy here. Let's try to pick one. We look at a number of things. We look at, of course, the composition of the photo, what's on the line of the surge. You know, is it more or less
really?
Sharp?
Really? You actually look at
focus, color, exposure. And that is bound to become better and better.
Yeah, sure.
At the same time, I don't want to give illusions that we can choose for you the best photo. That's not our job, and everyone has a different definition of what a best photo is.
Right.
What we do, however, is we really extract the one that matter. If you have 10 photos of, in this case, a tank, you're not going to see 10 photos of a tank anymore.
Right.
You know, and it already helps so much in making your
collection. Can I drill down and say, now I want to see
all
the photos?
Absolutely. So if you tap on any photo, you can see, as a moment, all the photos that are related, that were taken around this time.
Now right? We're going to see all the tank photos.
With all the redundancies, so you don't miss anything.
So really, the highlight view is the highlights to give us, it's almost an index into it.
It's a highlight of what you've done on a given year.
Yeah.
And it's
I can't wait to get my photos in.
You know, and it's all beautiful and fast. And it works especially well, I would say, if we can see it here.
Oh, you have the iPhone, too.
Yes. It works especially well on the iPhone because this is what people have been used to for a few years.
Right.
A grid like that, right?
Right.
And this is not a matter of improving the design of the grid. This is a matter of making the grid easier to understand and to navigate. So here's the same thing here on the iPhone app. If I go to highlights, now I have...
Oh, that's neat.
You know, not only is it better looking, because also when we think that a photo is interesting, we make it bigger.
Can you AirPlay this if I wanted to put this through the Apple TV?
Yes, I see no reason why it wouldn't work.
You didn't block it? No,
not at all. Yeah. And here you can see this is the trip. So you're at dinner. You want to show your trip, the recent trip.
Right. Happens all the time.
And you like this, and you can directly show...
There it is, and now we have it, and I can go like this.
Right, that. And these are the photos, and it contains all the key stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe we're going to miss one photo out of... It doesn't matter. It's still...
No,
at least you can show them,
in fact,
right?
The people I'm showing it to hope I'll miss a few photos. Yeah.
Right? And
really
you have the key
cool.
things.
Yeah.
Like
and
this.
The quality is great. And now, am I storing those photos on the phone?
So what we do is we store... thumbnails on the phone.
Cache.
Yes. Well, all the photos, all the thumbnails are always on the phone.
Okay, but
so
that's not a thumbnail. Fast. That's a fuller. Or is that a thumbnail?
That is a full size photo. Absolutely.
Okay.
So these we only cache the latest one you looked at, for obvious reasons.
Wow.
There's not enough.
Well, that's pretty speedy.
Thing.
So you're so. Yeah. What, these are loading as you slide through them? They're actually...
Correct. Yeah, now it's high-res. You can see there's a little spinner in the bottom right that shows when it's loading the photo.
Wow, that's
we optimized
great.
Our entire infrastructure from the start to really be able to handle 20,000 photos per account at least, at the minimum.
Without filling up the memory on the phone or on the iPad.
Everything. It was designed from that. We're building for the future, really.
This is cool.
And there are lots of problems in being able to do that. Like, we're also making sure that if you and I have the same photo and you upload them from your computer, you're not going to re-upload them because we already have them.
Ah. So you dedupe it there.
We also dedupe at the source, pre-dedupe at the source.
Do you have other sharing systems yet, or is that something coming down the road?
We have sharing, of course.
Oh, okay.
And I can show you on iPad.
Because I tied this into my Facebook and my Flickr and my Instagram and my Twitter.
So we can absolutely do all this. If you want to share photos, the big advantage is we have all your photos in our system for resolution, so it's very fast. And just select some photos like this, and then you can push to Facebook, Twitter, or the usual.
And does it link back to Everpix, or where does it?
So it depends what you do. If you push to Facebook, you just create an album with the photos.
Okay.
And we push them at 2K, which is the highest resolution.
Oh, okay.
Facebook
so
support.
You're sending a good quality.
Absolutely.
Facebook also compresses photos.
And they recompress the photo anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
And PhotoMail, for instance, is our own sharing. Not that we want to reinvent the wheel at all, because Facebook works very well and Twitter works very well for sharing. But we also use the opportunity that we have here to solve this long-time problem of giving digital copies of photos to people.
Right.
Like in the past, you could print actual copies of your photos and give them to your family and so on.
Right.
Nowadays, the problem is they all end up in various websites, and then people have to download them, or you're going to give them on some file-sharing service, and you have to make all these efforts, right?
Yes. What are they getting, a link now?
So no, they're getting the photos. So
they get their personal copy.
Let's take an example here, right? So I select, say I want to share some of these photos. I just do photo mail, select a recipient, and I can enter any email address, of course. And that's it.
They get those photos.
Right. And then they get...
We brought your site down.
Yeah, well, I guess that's possibly what's happened. We have too many viewers at once and an early-stage startup.
Are you using Amazon for storage, S3?
We're using the usual, like a lot of startup.
EC3.
EC2, all of that.
EC2
absolutely, S3, and so on and so on.
Cool.
It makes it very easy to get started.
That's really neat.
Yes.
We're talking to Paul. Pierre-Olivier Latour, and we'll talk a little bit more as we continue with triangulation. Actually, this is your chance to ask questions. We'll give the chat room a chance to ask in just a moment. Also, program note, iPad Today is coming up in just a bit. Sarah Lane has showed up. So we're going to do a special iPad Today as we pre-record. She's off to Paris for Le Web. in just a few days. So stay tuned for that. Our show today brought to you by a great company for people who want to buy media for use in their PowerPoints or podcasts or keynote presentations, but also people who create media. It's called Pond5, the world's stock media marketplace. If you are, you know, it's funny. I talked to the folks at Pond5. They said many of our customers are both. They are media creators. They take their photographers or videographers. They use, you know, After Effects or 3D, or they do music or sound effects. So they sell their stuff on Pond5. But they, the same people who do that very often are the people who, media creators, who are also doing presentations. They have podcasts. They have, they need music for their videos. And they get those from Pond5. Royalty-free. You get photos. There's more than a million photos there. Actually, more than 10 million professional quality photos. Vector illustrations. You see the counts there. I love that. Video clips. Sound effects, music tracks, motion graphic templates, 3D models, and more. And growing all the time in every category. They've got the best browser I've ever used. It's very easy to find what you need. They even have a free clip every single week, so you can get your clip of the week. Developers use Pond5 for sound effects for games. Designers use Pond5 so they don't have to build everything from scratch. Video and filmmakers use it for just the right shot. You know, you got everything, but you needed a thunderclap. Well, don't worry. Pond5 got it. They've got crocodiles, lots of them. So, media maker or artist, you got to check out Pond5. And we've got a special deal. They brought this back. They did this last year, and I love this. 50 free stock media downloads. No cost, no obligation. If you go to pond5.com/triangulation. 50, just do that. 50 free stock media downloads. Actually, it's a good chance to get the Pond5 account set up. No cost to you. You could see, get it kind of, use their browser, see how easy it is, and get the stuff you need. So I think that's a great place to go right now. Pond5, P-O-N-D, the number 5.com/triangulation, and you can get your hypno loops. I'm feeling sleepy. Pond5, you will go to pond5.com and download your 50 free stock media. Pond5.com/triangulation. We're talking to Paul, the creator, I think, of the best comic book application. And I'm really pleased to see you're still doing it, even though you've got this other thing. Comic Flow is still alive and well.
Yes, in all fairness.
Still free.
It's free. It's just, you know, a side project I did, I think, a year and a half ago. I was really frustrated with the state of comic reading apps.
Yeah.
And because if you have a large collection, none of them was able to handle a large collection.
Right.
They were crashing, they were slow.
Right.
And it was a terrible pain. So I just wanted to fix that. And so I built this
one.
Are
you a comic book collector? Obviously you are.
So I need to give a bit of context here. It's that in the French language, there is actually a very strong culture of what we call graphic novels.
Right.
That's the most accurate translation, right? Bande dessinée in French. And this is actually a very different world from the comic world.
I agree.
A different type of heroes, yes. A lot of history. It's really high-quality fiction in a lot of cases. And, of course, there's all type of genres. So there is very, very interesting graphic artists doing this work, very interesting books, and now you can, of course, access all that digitally, more or less legally, right?
Right.
And
we're not talking Marvel and DC here. This stuff is... But, you know, I have to say, I grew up on Tintin and quite a few French comics for children.
Yes.
And I think that probably your generation did as well.
Did. Yes, yes.
And so it makes sense that as you get to be adults, now you want the same kind of treatment, but of adult content.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. And I think graphic novels have taken off in the U.S. Worldwide now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just Superman and Batman.
Right. I mean, Watchmen was a good example, right?
Amazing.
Yes, very good work. Yeah. So now imagine instead of one very well-known like that in the U.S., imagine like hundreds, right,
in
French language. And it's, what's a little sad here is that there's apparently no demand or market to translate that.
Oh, that's too bad.
And get it to American readers.
Well, learn French.
Yes.
So what do you like? Recommend some so people watching can...
You know, off the top of my head, I mean, there are so many these days.
Is there a site to go to? Well, I'd love to. I want to get into it. I read enough French that I probably could.
Oh, there you go.
Sort of. And it's a graphic novel, so
yes,
it's not so hard. It's not like reading.
You would be surprised because all the historical ones.
Right.
A lot of them were done in the 80s. I mean, 1980s. They were writing a lot of graphic novels that were happening during the 17th century, 16th century,
really?
And so on.
Neat.
Because, well, there's so many great stories you can do, right?
The Three Musketeers. And
a lot of writers then would go to a lot of pen to use accurate words of the time.
Oh.
And very often when you read
them, they're archaic.
I have to look up the words.
even you do.
Right. So it's
and there's
not
probably a lot of
easy.
Slang in the modern ones, so you're right, it's hopeless.
Yes.
I'm going to start to find some and download them. That's you've got me intrigued now. And, of course, I'll be reading them on my iPad in Comic Flow. And I am already uploading my pictures to EverPix. I think this is a really a great idea. When did you go public?
Well,
your beta?
We had a beta for about 6-8 months, maybe. It's not really limited, but in the sense that we weren't doing any promotion around it.
Right.
So whoever stumbles upon it and is intrigued was able to try it, and that's it. But we had this interesting problem where we had to build a product too at the same time we were testing it.
Right.
But with the scale of every new user who comes in, brings in thousands and thousands of photos.
A lot of pictures.
So you end up spending your time maintaining the infrastructure or building the product.
Right.
So that's why we stayed under the radar for about a year.
Because you really
just
wanted
building,
to
create. Building, evolving.
Wow.
Having some users who are willing to beta test, that's perfectly
right.
Fine. But now the product, we feel, with the addition of the highlight view, really gets close to our vision.
Yeah.
And you have a real product that solves a concrete problem and not just a series of features put together, right? So now we're happy to start promoting it and exposing and charging people for it and so on.
Good. I can't wait to see it. They're importing them right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give the chat room a chance if you have some questions. Some people are wondering, like F and Dunn in our chat room, about other services to feed images. Could you take RSS feeds, for instance, or
that? You know, honestly, that's not really a technical problem to do that. We could sync like a gazillion services.
Right.
You know, once you've done three or four, like we've done, the rest is more or less the same.
So you're looking at that?
Well, in our case, we really want to get the original photos.
Right.
We want to get the full resolution. We want to get all the metadata.
Got
so
it.
We'd much rather have you import them from your computer.
That's the so even though you support Instagram and Facebook and all that, the best thing to do would be use the uploader.
Yes.
And,
because
and
think about
that.
It. One of the base issue is your photos are not in the cloud in the first place because it's hard to put them in.
Right.
No matter what.
Right.
So if we just synchronize with services, for example, Flickr, who has time to upload 20,000 photos by hand to Flickr? Very few people do that.
It's really a subset of
so
everything.
So no matter what, we have to grab the photos at the source.
And when you dedupe, you will prefer the higher quality.
Yeah, we always do that.
Yeah.
And we preserve also the information of all the sources, which
that's
is very
nice.
Interesting. So
that's
if you have the
nice.
Same photo in Facebook,
right.
the same photo on your hard drive, the same photo in iPhoto, for instance.
You're going to merge all
yeah,
of that?
Yeah, we merge all of that.
That's
we merge
great.
All the metadata, and you can see it when you look at the information of the photo. You have this photo in Facebook, in Instagram, in on your hard drive, or who knows.
Green LED is concerned about privacy. If he says, is there a way if I decide I don't want you to keep my photos anymore, I want to move on to permanently delete those?
Absolutely. We're very big on privacy, so we're one of the few services to actually delete your photos for real if you delete your account.
Good for you.
There is of course, like a 30-day latency in our system in case you delete stuff by mistake.
Right.
But after that, they're really deleted from our servers.
You don't want them? Just waste space on your hard drives. You did mention you're working on an Android version. You got a timetable yet for that? Or?
Nothing that we can share at this point. You know, it's like I've briefly shown with our iPad and iPhone app, we have to be able to build an app that can handle 20,000 photos and be very fast and very responsive.
It's challenging, right? Yeah.
And on iOS, we have the advantage of having very few models to play with. So it simplifies development and testing and so on. Android has a wider user base now and has come with also more type of devices you need to support. So we want, like everything we do, we want to take our time to do it right.
Yep.
So we started working on it, but there's nothing we can share at this point.
And a Windows uploader is coming out.
Yes, that's in beta already,
So that's closer.
Yes, absolutely. No, good. Totally good. By the end of the year.
Good. Let's see. I'm just checking for the chat room for questions. They're having a side conversation right now. Can you embed the photos in a web page? In other words, can I get a link to an individual photo?
We don't really support that today.
Yeah. That would be an unnecessary use of your bandwidth. Then you'd be providing a photo service as opposed
to... Yes, I mean, you know, when we say we support unlimited photos, it's because we don't want the user to have to deal with plans and so on, but we also make it clear this is not for commercial use.
Right. How about, let's see, we're just looking at that. Widgets, asks Vince360. I'm not sure what that means.
Like little to embed a gallery, maybe?
Yeah.
In your website?
Yeah.
No, we don't do that today.
Okay. Do you have an interface, an API, or an RSS feed, or any other way that I could get data out of?
Not at this point.
No, you want people to use your apps to view.
We're not trying to hold people's data hostage, but you know, we're a six-people company, a couple contractors.
Right.
We have a lot on our plate, a very complex problem that we're tackling.
Right.
A lot of infrastructure to build, a lot of design. We can only do so much.
Yeah,
so
I think
focus
that's
on the core.
I think we're at a stage, it's very interesting to watch as the years go by, where people are becoming more realistic about their financial model, about how much they can do. They've built a few companies. They're starting to understand that the go-go years of saying, we'll worry about scaling later, or we'll worry about users later, or how to make money, monetization later. People are kind of being a little bit more measured.
And I think it's even more true in our space, like in the photo space, because it's so overloaded.
Yes.
I mean, we didn't choose to go there because it was overloaded, but that's a matter of fact.
It happens.
And you have to compete with a lot of free products.
Right.
And even if a lot of these products are really pretty bad, still it gives the impression that in the photo space, things should essentially be free. But we want to build a long-term company. We need to be profitable.
Right.
We're building a quality service. We don't want to destroy all our beautiful design by adding ads and things like that.
Right.
So we have to charge customers.
Right.
We give you a full trial.
$40 a year is a very fair amount of money. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If I have an image on my screen, can I save it out to my camera roll? Or?
We have that in the next version, actually.
That's
not
coming.
The version on the App Store, yes.
Got it. That was another question F. and Dunn wanted to know. How do you block the government, asks Andy in Germany. It's always the Germans that want to know that.
Yes.
Well, and it's not their government. It's our government. They're worried more about the U.S. government. Yeah.
Well, I don't... Honestly, you know, it's hosted on Amazon servers. If Amazon gets a subpoena now, and like we're all in the same boat here.
We're all in the same boat, exactly. He says it's your Swiss heritage is showing. Be responsible with finances, but don't. Yeah, that's true. High risk, high reward. But I think that this all makes a lot of sense. Android version's coming. Windows version is almost there. If you want to sign up, all you have to do is go to everpix.com and
you're
30 days free.
Is that simple?
Do what I did. It's importing now my stuff now, and I'm gonna maybe in time for iPad today. I'll download the app. And I can show people my my cruise pictures.
That'd be great.
Which I haven't shown anybody because it's too much trouble to get it all up into the Google Plus. You think you'll have a support Google Plus image? You do. Picasa Web.
We have Picasa Web.
So Picasa Web. All your images, if you are using Google Plus, are stored on Picasa Web.
Yes.
So that
it should work. I mean, Google Plus is still pretty restrictive with their APIs today.
Yeah.
Like we cannot post.
Picasa Web's the way to go.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I wish you the best. I think this is. I can't wait to use this.
Well, thank you very much.
Everpix.com, Pierre-Olivier Latour. And thank you for Quartz Composer, for Comic Flow, for the stuff you did at Cool Iris Discover was so cool. We've shown a lot of your stuff on our shows.
Oh, glad you liked it, yeah.
And I didn't know it was all the same guy. You have a real knack for beautiful design
and
making that stuff sing. I can't wait to play with it. Thank you.
Thank you very
Paul,
much
nice to
me.
Meet you.
Yes.
And thank you all for joining us at Triangulation. We do the show every Wednesday around about 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2300 UTC if you're watching outside the U.S. Please tune in. We love having a live audience. As you can see, the chat room is very important. And try to focus if you're in the chat room and ask questions, okay? Don't leave me hanging here, all right? But you can also get the show after the fact anytime, audio and video on demand at twit.tv. Best yet, subscribe. And then you'll get every... And you don't want to miss. This is the one show you really don't want to miss. There's always somebody interesting on Triangulation. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time.